For marketing agencies and social media managers looking to prove the value of their work, I've got something special for you. Agora Pulse is not only Social Media Examiner's tool of choice as an all-in-one social media management tool, it also allows you to track the traffic, conversion, and revenue from every social post, comment, and private message. Learn how to prove your social media ROI with a free training or a free trial by visiting agorapulse.com/SME today. Again, agorapulse.com/SME.
Welcome to the Social Media Marketing Podcast, helping you navigate the social media jungle. And now, here is your host, Michael Stelzner.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for joining me for the Social Media Marketing Podcast, brought to you by Social Media Examiner. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner, and this is the podcast for marketers and business owners who want to know how to navigate the ever-changing marketing jungle. Today, I'll be joined by Andy Crestedina, and we're going to explore how to create content that triggers massive reach on the social platforms. By the way, speaking of these social platforms, I am at Stelzner on Facebook and at Mike_Stelzner on Twitter/X. And if you're new to this podcast, be sure to follow this show so you don't miss any of our future content. Let's transition over to this week's interview with Andy Crestedina.
Helping you to simplify your social safari. Here is this week's expert guide.
Today, I'm very excited to be joined by Andy Crestedina. If you don't know who Andy is, you got to know Andy. He's the author of Content Chemistry. He's also the co-founder and strategic director of Orbit Media, a digital agency that helps B2B businesses build and optimize websites. His YouTube channel is at Orbit Media. Andy, welcome back to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Mike. I'm excited to be back. Thanks for having me. This will be fun.
It's super awesome to have seen you at Social Media Marketing World and great to have you back on the show. Today, Andy and I are going to explore the type of content that triggers massive reach on social, but it's been a long time since you've been on the show, 2017, which feels like forever in the online world. So kind of bring us up to speed of what you've been doing over the last 7 years or so, and then we'll get into all the awesome content stuff.
Well, business-wise, I am still on the same path. I'm kind of the guy who never pivoted. I've been doing this. Orbit Media has been focused. We're like a digital agency, as you said, focused on websites. That's been the same since 2001.
Was there any, during COVID, any challenges with the business?
Sure. Yep. Certainly were. We have our own micro conference, nothing like World, but it's something we've done every year. And we got up to like 600 people and it was growing at that time. And so we put down a big deposit on a venue and lost it. I have 30 or 40 empty desks around me.
Wow.
We let go of some of our space. I mean, at its peak, there were like 42 people here every day. Today, there's probably six.
Wow.
So yes, of course, weird times, but everything's going quite well. I mean, we continue to grow a smidge, but the big changes are in the topics, of course, like analytics evolved, new tools, AI, GA4 and AI, probably the two biggest changes. And those are just the last, 12, 14 months.
Yeah. For people that don't know, Andy, prior to COVID, was a regular speaker at our conference, often covering Google Analytics. And the AI side of things, just talk to us a little bit about how you've mixed that into all of what you've been doing over the last few years.
Yeah. So I knew when that happened that it was going to be big enough that my audience and reach and relevance was either going to go up or going to go down. It wasn't going to stay the same. So I could either embrace AI and like capture the interest and like learn the tool and experiment and have a lot of fun myself, but also have something to teach people that people were looking to learn. Content's fundamentally about addressing your visitors' information needs. If I had decided to defer or ignore that trend, I think I would have had fewer things. I don't think you would have needed me this last year at your event. I just don't think I would have had as much interesting, useful content. So I went all in. I did tons of research. I talked to pros all the time, like traded notes, and built a framework that I was able to use as a presentation at your event, which went quite well. But it's fascinating just how many use cases there are. And I'm sure we'll talk about a few. It's something that can be used responsibly and often cautiously, but in so many different ways. There's so many jobs and little tasks we do as content marketers, and there's sort of an AI use case for each of them.
Well, and let's just spend a few seconds talking about your business model, particularly with you as a thought leader, because my presupposition, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that you definitely speaking was a big part of your business model, right? So you would go around to conferences and you would speak often on analytics and insights related activities, right? And that was obviously helpful for your business, right? Which you co-founded, right? Is that still true today?
It is. It was never something that where I had like really strong data behind it or like accurate attribution for like exactly which leads came from which events. I never bothered to even try to track at that level. But my philosophy was always to try to publish something that was beyond the reader's expectations and then to always reformat and repurpose. So I would pick a topic, go deep into that topic, make the article that was like almost like, you know, the bigger, badder guide than anyone else publishing, you know, with more screenshots and a video summary and all these things. But then to also then take that and turn it into a deck or a slide or a video or a presentation. And I've been fortunate to be invited to speak and then invited to come back and speak at many events many times. There's events that I've loved forever where I've spoken every year for 10 years. So it was just, I just have that kind of ecosystem thinking where the article, the video, the presentation, the topics for podcasts, all the social media content, you know, YouTube, email, all these things work together. So it's just been our philosophy and approach to it all along was to make everything available in every format we possibly can. And that, of course, meant lots of presentations.
Well, and you've also been publishing a report, kind of the state of blogging. Is that correct? What's the title of that report?
I wonder. It never really had a great title, like the blogging survey, the, you know, Orbit's annual blogging survey, is I think what people call it. I've never been like a branding guy or never named anything. My blog is just called the Orbit Media Blog. But starting 10 plus years ago, started, you know, I had this idea. I can publish new original research, create a new statistic that nobody had ever published before, such as how long does it take to write a blog post? Got 1,000 bloggers to take a survey with that plus 10 or 20 other questions. And then published the answer. And then did it again and again and again year after year. So there's a piece of content on my site that has charts that literally show how the investment in an individual piece of content has changed over the years, how long the average piece of content is, you know, how many images people put in their articles, how does that correlate with results? We ask the question, do you get results? Then we correlate that with every other answer. My data has like the correlation between getting results and collaborating with influencers or using video or multiple images or longer posts or publishing more often or publishing all these different kind of correlations, which is fun. And now, of course, AI is a question. So I can't wait to see how that changes over time.
Well, for those that don't know Andy, he is a content creator. We would call ourselves bloggers back in the olden days. Right now we call ourselves creators. So I just wanted to kind of establish a little bit of that for people that do not know you, Andy. So now as we're recording this in 2024, 7 years since you've last been on the show, but of course, not so long since you've been involved with a lot of different things we've had going on at Social Media Examiner. Why is content so important today, as we're recording this in the spring of 2024?
Well, content has always had a strong effect at the top, middle, and bottom of the funnel. So content, when especially when optimized for search or when it gets traction in social, is going to grow your audience and brand awareness. In the middle of the funnel, when content gets people to follow or subscribe, it's going to keep you involved in their thinking, top of mind, part of their decision-making process when they're ready to, you know, choose a partner. And then at the bottom of the funnel, you can send content directly to your leads, to your prospects. You can write content. You can write nurture sequences that go to people who are just got a proposal from you. There's lots of powerful ways it can support sales directly. So yes, for marketing and sales. And now we always wanted to get discovered in Google, and that's great. And I'm an SEO from way back. But now I think that there's a new benefit for content, and that's that the AIs are trained on the internet. So if you want to be recommended when people ask an AI who to use for something, or if you want your answer to appear when people ask the AI, like how long does it take to write a blog post or a million other questions, content is going to help you get mentioned by AI tools, which is something that I don't
know. ChatGPT, Claude 3, yes, all that stuff,
yes,
right?
Yes. So, and weirdly, very recently, I started seeing as referral traffic in my analytics, traffic from perplexity.ai.
Tell everybody what that is for those that don't know what that is.
It's trying to be a Google killer. The theory is that Google is very noisy and messy and, you know, there's lots of tracking codes and ads. Sometimes you just want a quick answer. So AI is hoping to be a faster, lighter weight, less visually noisy way to get your answer. And perplexity.ai kind of does that by its information discovery, not information retrieval like a search engine, but it's AI, it's generative AI, so it's going to generate the answer for you. But it's just a tool for looking things up. And it's very, very different experience from Google, and a lot of people like it.
Yeah, and my experience with it and my understanding of Perplexity.ai is that it pulls data from different AI large language models like Claude, ChatGPT, Google, Gemini, or I forget who has Gemini, it might be Microsoft, but, and it provides you kind of a simple, quick answer. Connecting the dots to what you said earlier is you're saying that you're actually getting traffic to your website specifically because the AI systems know who either you are, or they know who your company is, or they know about your content and people are clicking to discover more. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah. If you go to GA4 and set the traffic acquisition report so that the left column is showing sources and you create a filter to show referrals, now it's showing all the websites from which you get traffic, right? When the source is a website and the medium is referral. Then add another dimension, it's that plus button, gives you another column for the landing page. Perplexity.ai is sending visitors to pages that are original research, that are long-form detailed answers. Like my article about like what features are standard on websites is getting recommended by AI. It's strange. And I think eventually I'm going to publish a thing like ways to get AI to mention you, and it'll include a lot of different tactics. But clearly it's the content that works well in search is also working well for content discovery in AI. This is a lot of speculation. And Mike, well, we should talk again in the future when there's more data on this, but it's interesting. AI is not the end of website of content discovery. It's just a new channel.
100%. And it's a very fascinating topic that I'm definitely hoping to explore down the road a little bit. So let's talk about social platforms now. We've been spending a little bit of time talking about how content is so important for middle, top, and bottom of funnel, presumably when it's published on your website. Now, what I'd love to talk about is the social side of things. But let's start with the algorithms. From your understanding, what is important? What do we need to understand when it comes to the algorithms and specifically content?
Well, you know this. So what you mean, you are Mike Stelzner and you're the founder of Social Media Examiner. So I'll say what everyone sort of already knows probably, which is that the platforms want engagement. They want visitors to come to the platform and to stay on the platform. They want people who are highly engaged. They want things to, they want to be able to put things in streams that cause visitors to slow down, to watch a video, to tap, to engage, to comment, to like, to share. These are the things that increase traffic on the platform. That traffic can be monetized. So there's no secret for why social media algorithms are pushing more engaging content into streams. So the obvious response is for the marketer to create content that is highly engaging, triggering the algorithm, which can, surprisingly, Mike, I got to tell you, like, I've got a piece of content right now. It's like breathtaking amount of visibility. It's like, what just happened? This algorithm decided to like this thing. It's actually on YouTube, but it's like, kaboom. I think it's like my typical YouTube video has maybe 1,000 views. I think that's good. This thing has like 190,000 views. What happened? And if, you know, we can talk about it, deconstruct it. It's sort of like obvious what's happening is it's getting such high engagement.
That's a great setup for certain kinds of content seems to perform really well, right? So let's talk about like what content is triggering this kind of engagement, because a lot of us that are creators, especially those of us that are writers, which I think you and I would classify ourselves as writers, even though we're also creating audio and video content, we always write something that we hope people will love, but not everything we write is going to get people to engage with the content, right? So what kind of content spurs engagement?
Perfect question. We're there. This is the meat of it. I will answer it in three words. Counter-narrative opinions. You could even say two words. Strong opinions. Op-ed. Perspective. People who plant a flag. Content that takes a stand. This is absolutely what gets responses. So if you come up for it against something, if you kind of stake your claim here as believing in something and taking and making a case for it, your readers, your viewers will also have an opinion on that topic frequently, and they'll also chime in. Now, as soon as people listening might hear that and think, wow, I don't know if I want to like really like stick my neck out on these like big topics of the day like this. There's a lot, you know, kind of a polarized society already. I don't really need to wade into that murky corner of the internet. Here's the trick. It doesn't have to be, you know, these major modern political, moral topics. Mundane topics, super mundane topics, people have very strong opinions. So it's kind of funny. The piece I had that got all that triggering engagement and therefore greater visibility in YouTube is an article that said these are 13 things you should remove from your websites. such as PDF files. Come on, make an HTML version of that. PDFs are like the rust of the internet. Dates on your blog. It just makes your content look older, faster. Remove dates from your blog. Like colorful social icons in your header. What are you doing? Those are exit signs. You don't want your visitor to leave and go to social. They're not coming back. So these things just like, there's hundreds and hundreds of comments, people agreeing and disagreeing with these very mundane points, really, right? So it's kind of funny how, you know, there's like the Oxford comma, I swear. Everyone's got an opinion on it. You know, you're not going to anger an executive somewhere or get fired from your job by talking about a comma. It's just amazing to me how mundane topics, it shouldn't be, but because of Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm, and there's lots of cultural clues that this is, you know, something that works well, but very, very mundane topics people have very, very strong perspectives on. And those sometimes can work within a content strategy.
So talk to me about why you believe this works. I mean, you kind of hinted to it just briefly there for a second, but I'd like to know the why behind it, because I want to probe it a little bit, right? Because what I'm hearing you say is, hey, take a stand on something, offer a perspective on something. It could be like, honestly, I'm an AirPods guy and you're a Google guy. It could be Apple versus Google, or it could even be like something really simple. But why does that kind of content do what it does? Like, let's just explore that a little bit. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, first of all, if you compare it to most of what's in your audience's stream, it's different. It's just different. It's not common. It's not a common element to a content strategy, which is why our mutual friend, Ann Handley, makes such a strong point and it's kind of been beating this drum for years. Like, be bold, people, take a stand, don't hold back. You know, you have a point of view. So it's differentiated. It's not common. I think it's going to become even less common in the era of AI generated content. People ask this, like, oh, what am I going to do? There's so much, you know, AI is producing so much stuff so fast at such a low cost. How am I going to compete against? It's easy to compete against AI. Just do what AI doesn't do, which is have an opinion. The three ways to compete against AI content, I think, are to collaborate with influencers. AI has no friends. Have a strong point of view. AI has no opinions. And to record yourself. AI has no face, right? Do what we're doing now. So it's differentiated, I think, first of all. Another thing is that it's a different tone than the visitor expects when they click or tap. When you land on a page and that page is not using all kinds of qualifying language and like, in some cases, you might want to consider that there's a chance that it's like, no, I know that removing dates from blog posts increase your GA4 engagement rate. See, I didn't hold that back. See how when you remove all the qualifying words and try not to be like 100% accurate and instead just state your point of view, it just lands differently in the mind of the visitor. You are more likely to be memorable, which is a key to success factor. You're more likely to get shared, to get engagement, to get all that greater visibility from the algorithm. So I guess just mostly it's different.
I like it. And I know some of you right now are like thinking of people that have really strong opinions that polarize their audience. And I think Andy and I both want to let you know, you don't have to be that person. We all can think of someone in our industry that's like that, right? Like, he or she will take the opposite stance of everyone else in the industry and say, I strongly disagree. That's not what we're talking about here, right? We're talking about just take a stand for any little thing that you believe to be true and talk about it. And if there's others that don't agree with you, which is the objective here, right, is to find something that there are two sides to the equation on, right? Like, that's the key to create conversation and to create engagement in order for this all to really get the kind of reach that we're hoping for. Because what Andy is saying is true, that the algorithms want to show content that have rich, deep discussion. Mark Zuckerberg has been very transparent about this for years. Meaningful conversation, not like a emoji or a thumbs up or three words. We're talking about a paragraph. If it triggers a paragraph, awesome. And I've experienced this firsthand. And you've experienced this firsthand as well with all sorts of different kinds of content. So I think what a lot of people might be thinking about is, all right, well, how do I actually come up with something? How do I come up with a strong opinion. So let's address that. Like, where do we even start? Because I think you believe it to be true that all of us are capable of this. Is that fair to say?
I think it's human nature. I think we all have perspectives and that there is in each of our heads ideas that are not necessarily universally accepted. And you know, there's counter narrative thoughts that we have every day. They're not all going to fit in your content strategy. There's actually a really fast and easy way to do this. And I taught this in my session at Social Media Marketing World. It's to use AI, ironically. So in my session, I picked an example of a company or a category. It was like space launch services, like you're a satellite launch company or a spaceport. And so all the methods that I did walk through with like a sample business. But when I got to that part of the content strategy thing, first of all, you have to build a persona or give it your persona or have it write a persona prompt to have it understand your audience. Taking a step back, I don't believe in using AI for content creation until I have taught the AI who I'm talking to. I think that's absurd.
Did you know that we can deliver awesome marketing info directly into your inbox? Simply subscribe to our weekly newsletter that comes out 3 days a week. You won't miss any of the updates going on in the world of social marketing. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates. Okay, step one is to use a tool like ChatGPT or Claude, because right now Claude is hotter than ChatGPT as of this moment as far as its intellect, and to tell it, hey, you are a, give us an example prompt of what a persona might be like.
Build me a persona of a commercial satellite operator of a mid-sized global telecom company who is responsible for successful launch operations and growing a satellite communications network. List your hopes and dreams, your fears and concerns, your emotional triggers, and your decision criteria for choosing a launch services company. That prompt, just replace everything in there with your business. It'll write for you. ChatGPT is what I'm using. It'll write for you a persona, and it will be partly incorrect, and then you fix it. You just tell it what's wrong. When I did this, it made up a persona. It's always named Alex. So Alex did not have anything in there about like risk management. Hey, 2 minutes of research, I learned that satellite operators care about risk. So I told it to add risk management. Cool. Fine. I've got a persona now. The utility is crazy, right? You can talk to it day or night. You can ask it about its decision-making process. Like, what does it care about? What does it hate about looking for launch companies? What might it click on? What might it search for? You can run your sales scripts against it. You can give it a web page and say, what's this page missing? It's fantastic. This is definitely the way to use AI in my experience. But in this content strategy piece, the next prompt sounds like this. What are some relatively mundane, almost trivial space industry topics that professionals have, that space pros have a strong opinion about? And the answer is fascinating. Number one was units of measurement. Hey, I don't think we're going to get in trouble with our boss by talking about the metric system on our blog. The next one was naming conventions, whether names of spacecraft or celestial bodies. These are things that, you know, if I was trying to connect with satellite operators and I wrote about, you know, the history of how rockets got named or stories of, you know, good and bad about, you know, the imperial versus metric systems, you're going to get a ton of comments, right? There's going to be a conversation that happens because everyone's got opinions on these things. Those opinions lead to engagement. That engagement triggers an algorithm. That algorithm drives greater visibility. Just try it like 2, 3, 4 times a year. Why not? Like, and that prompt will sort of give you a big head start on what might work quite well.
I think we could probably come up with one on the fly. Let's say the persona. And I love the fact that you're saying build a persona who the target audience is instead of like you're a copywriter writing to an audience. So we could say hypothetically, build a persona for a marketer who works for a small business and is in the marketing department and is responsible for more sales, more leads, and more exposure. They hope to get a promotion. Their ultimate dream is maybe to be the director of marketing. Their biggest fears and concerns are being left behind or not staying up with the times, right? And what triggers them is not having answers to questions. I just made that up on the fly, but I think we could say that's pretty accurate, right?
Yep.
And then we could say, all right, what are some relatively mundane or trivial topics that these kinds of marketers have or differences of opinions in? Now, I'm running this through Mike GPT on the fly, and I think some might say, well, video versus the written word, right? That would be one. Or short form versus long form video, right? Like you've got the short form maxis who everything is 60 seconds or less, and then you've got the long form people, right? Audio versus video, Instagram versus TikTok, right?
How about Twitter versus X?
There you go.
Everybody cares a lot. Like, just mention that's just right.
Yeah, I said in my keynote, I'm just going to call it Twitter. You know what I mean? And that's
I watched your keynote and loved it. Thank you. That was great.
Yeah, because I wasn't going to go there.
Everybody laughed. Yeah, you said like, I'm just calling it Twitter today, guys. And it was great. It was a great little moment.
Yeah, so your ChatGPT is going to give us stuff and hopefully we're going to validate it against what we know and then pick some, what are we looking for exactly out of the output from ChatGPT?
Well, it'll be 80% garbage and that's fine. We are not expecting it to be correct or accurate or perfect or comprehensive. It's just triggering ideas. So it'll give you a bunch of ideas and you're going to ignore most of them. Who cares? Is that a failure? Not at all. How much time do we invest in this exercise? 3 minutes. So the few ideas that you got that you liked, it's like, wow, yeah, you know, this thing is it called a guide or ebook? Wow, my audience, you know, ChatGPT thinks my audience has a perspective on the words guide versus ebook. What can I do with that? My brain's doing a lot of stuff right now, just thinking of what to do with that topic, with that question. I'm thinking of research. I'm thinking of a survey. I'm thinking of social posts. I'm thinking of contributors. Who has a perspective on this? Who I could collaborate with? What websites might be interested in this? What social accounts? I'm thinking of formats. Maybe this would be a fun little video or a ranty kind of op-ed post. I call it the evil twin, right? The what not to do post. Don't call it an ebook. Lower engagement. Call it a guide. Ebook sounds like homework. Guide sounds useful. So anyone listening to this that's done content strategy is probably also going in many directions at once in their mind, just thinking of all the ways. There's so many ways you get traction just from this one tiny opinion-based topic. Even if it doesn't trigger the algorithm, I mean, you'll have a lot of fun that day on the internet.
So you hinted earlier that you recently created a piece of content that did really well on YouTube. Did you source any of that from ChatGPT, or was that all based on stuff you previously written?
I did not. That's an update to a 9-year-old article. Part of my content strategy is to go back and update old things. It's just that URL is kind of been seasoned out there. Don't change the URL. Keep the URL. Write a new post. Not even like a minor update, like a rewrite. You know, it was originally, you know, different things. So I changed a bunch of stuff on there. And I rewrote this article of like what not to do on a website, which goes perfectly with content strategy, right? We're a web development company. So doing that, I'd gotten to reuse some of those and I added some new ones and, you know, changed the mix. But afterwards, thinking back and looking at it and working with clients and not knowing their industry as well as mine, and after hearing some interviews with the other content strategists who talked about this idea of counter-narrative opinions, having discussed this and read Anne's books and talked to friends out, you know, for drinks and knowing how, you know, certain topics are just, I don't want to deal with that today. Like that is way too intense for my content strategy. Realized AI can help me do this. This might work in AI. So part of what I do in AI is just create prompts to emulate the things that I have done for years. I need to update my book and make a prompt for every different method so that you can just copy and paste that prompt. And then it kind of gives you 2/3 of the output you're looking for. It was just, once again, me just writing prompts to do things that I was doing by hand.
Okay. So far in this process, we have used AI to help us identify some possible low-risk topics that we could write about that have differing opinions. Let's say we've got a list of 5 things that we think are really, really good. So what I want to know now is, how do we actually go about creating content that actually does have an opinion? Because everybody who's listening probably has a couple of ideas in their brain, but they don't even know where to start once they've actually got this thing that has 2 sides to the equation. Like, what do they do next?
Mm-hmm. Well, one way that you can, one of the takeaways here is just to strengthen your language a little bit and be a bit more direct and forthright than you might have been otherwise. One of the lessons to takeaways is just to write more directly, just to come at the topic harder than you used to do, instead of making things a little bit squishy and maybe, you know, slightly more correct, but a little bit just fluffed up. Hit your points a little harder. So that's something just to take away for all of us.
Give me an example of what that might sound like.
That article was called 13 Things to Remove from Your Website Immediately.
The immediately thing.
Yeah, immediately. Like, do this now. Like, you're making a mistake if you don't do this now. That's what I was saying. Like, it's a press releases don't belong on websites. I don't think they belong there at all. That's not web content. For immediate release, why did you put it on the internet if it's not for right now? Like, it's bizarre. The little about section at the bottom, it's a dumb idea.
Okay, I have to ask you, Andy, did you feel a little uncomfortable actually being very transparent with your opinions in the beginning? Because, you know, a lot of us bloggers, if we're not trained to actually share our opinions, you know what I mean? It might feel a little awkward or odd. Or have you always been very direct and forthright with your opinions?
No, it's not actually natural for me, quite honestly. But I don't really feel like it's a risk because I'm not necessarily trying to change everyone's mind.
Right.
I'm just trying to start a conversation. So right next to that part of the written version of it, in that article where I'm like, don't put press releases on websites. It's absurd. That's not digital content best practices. Look at it. It makes no sense. Right below that, I have a contribution from a friend of mine. She's a PR pro who completely disagreed with me.
Oh, interesting.
I put dissenting opinions into my own content. The conversation is already happening in front of you while you're reading it. She said, no, press releases do belong on websites. Even if only a tiny percent of your visitors are members of the press, they came looking for that. It addresses their information needs. There's a target audience and a reason to do it. So I don't mind a bit. I will actually seek out people who have dissenting views when I write something. If what I write is, it's like I wrote an article that said, and I believe this, GA4 is better than Universal Analytics. I said it. I believe it's true. I think it's a better tool. Harder to use, yes, but you can go deeper into your data. I have contributions from 10 friends who all disagree with me. They're all so angry about GA4. Made it a fun piece. Seth Godin says the purpose of content is to start a conversation or give your audience something to talk about. It's not that I'm trying to, I'm not really preaching. I'm just stating my view, knowing that I am just one view and admitting I'm just one view. And I'm already including others in the other perspectives.
Okay, so I don't know if we're following the outline we had agreed on or if we're just going here, but you take me back if we're in the wrong direction. But I really like this collaboration with others concept, right? And I think a lot of people need to understand how to do this because I, for example, right now do not do that when I write on the social platforms. When I write on the social platforms, which is typically every week, except for when my life is crazy, which it is right now, I usually am sharing my views and perspectives, which is fully in alignment with what we've been talking about, right? I always have views and perspectives or observations or lessons that I learn that I try to share in a way that's engaging and fun with my audience that spurs conversation. But the idea that I'm actually going to intentionally solicit counter-narrative opinions or opinions at all feels like a lot of work. Maybe me and the audience needs a little thoughts on how to do this and even why it works.
Yeah, I love this. We're off script. This is just Andy and Mike hanging out talking about content. Here's the case for collaborative content marketing, which I would also define as simply like organic influencer marketing. You know, social is paid in organic, search is paid in organic, influencer marketing is paid in organic. Organic influencer marketing is just collaborating with others. It's either a roundup, it's contributor quotes and something else you're making, or it's an interview. Those are the three main formats. We're doing one right now that's like an interview format. So just collaborating with others, getting other points of view. One way to highlight the value of it, journalists don't write articles without sources. Maybe content marketers shouldn't write articles without contributor quotes. It's a practice of mine. Very rarely, only for that very bottom of funnel sales enablement content will I write without a contributor quote. But 99% of everything I've written 580 articles in my career, have contributor quotes in them. I do not publish without adding a contributor quote, at least one. Several benefits. When you share that, I'm active on LinkedIn. When you share that, you get a reason, a pretext to mention others. Mentioning people in social posts increases reach. How do I get to mention people? I included them in it. I also grow my network. If I've met tons of people through content creation, and your blog is an amazing networking tool. Third thing, you're going to learn by creating the content. You're going to learn by reading your own blog. I mean, if you want to meet somebody, you're the media. Reach out and ask them if they'd like to share their opinion on something. You could use this for prospects. Reach out to your ideal client and just ask for their point of view on something that you know they care about. And if they share a quote, right? You're a media hit when you reach out like that. Like, it's just great networking. I've learned tons by getting quotes from people that taught me things I didn't know. So yeah, in the end, it's called ego bait. You've got a reason to mention people. You don't have to worry if these influencers are going to ever see your thing because you included them in it. My annual blogging survey, you've been a contributor, has a contributor quote for every data point. So there's like 12 big name influencers in each of these pieces every year. Of course it gets shared like crazy. So I'm a big fan. We talked about events. In an event, if it's a kind of a divisive topic or there's multiple points of view, you program in a panel. The equivalent in the event world would be like a panel. It's just making your certain of your posts into a panel. The strongest way to say this, it was John Benigni said this. He said, we're in a post single point of view era for content. That's not true for, I mean, you've got such reach and your reputation and your knowledge is so deep that anything you write is going to land well. But for people earlier in their journey, I think it's a fantastic shortcut in that just as a general rule, I would always, always look for, and something I learned from you years ago, you said, put something interesting, put a visual at every scroll depth. This is going to give you another reason to put a visual because you've got their face. You know, we do it where there's a face and a name and a job and a link. So it actually just makes the content more engaging too. It like keeps the visitor flowing, keeps that scan reader flowing through the content.
Well, a couple of things came to my mind while you were talking, which is really fascinating. When I began Social Media Examiner, I was a contributing writer to Marketing Profs and also to copy blogger Brian Clark's company. And I wrote an article called The Dark Side of Twitter on Copyblogger and a similar one for Facebook. I think it was The Dark Side of Facebook or something like that. I mean, for Ann Hanley, for Marketing Profs. And both of these people told me that this was the best, most highest performing article or in the top three for the entire year. And what I did was exactly what you've been advocating. I reached out to people that I knew in my network and I asked them for their opinions and stories. And I tried to be a journalist, even though I have no journalistic background training. And I integrated all these different people's opinions into it. And I made this case that Twitter was dangerous. This is very early. We're talking like 2009, 2010. And I talked about all the dark side of it, but I also talked about the upside of it, right? And I talked about how when the plane crashed in the Hudson, how people were the first ones on the scene. These articles just went nuts. So Andy is correct that if you can strategically, which requires a lot more work, but the upside can be massive, right, Andy?
Yeah. The difference for me is that I can't really be last minute every time. So I write an article every 2 weeks and it goes live for my newsletter every 2 weeks. I have a LinkedIn newsletter that goes live weekly. So I'm kind of repurposing and freshening up older things. So every other week I have like this Monday morning deadline so that Amanda can get things ready to publish on Wednesday. I don't want to stress out my friends by asking them last minute, do you have a perspective on this topic? Please send me a short blurb, anything on this or that, or here's a draft. It affects your workflow. You're going to start a week or two earlier, and you're going to start networking with people that you don't know yet, or reaching out to people in your network, and just letting them know that you're going to make this thing. Ironically, even if they're too busy or don't reply, if the networking benefit you can still get by sending them the thing once it's live. So if I ask somebody like I wrote a piece about GA4 and SEO. This guy I reached out to, I hadn't talked to him in a long time, Bill from Green Lane, wasn't available. He was sick, like couldn't get back to me. No problem. But after it's live, I have a reason to send it to Bill. It's a social world. The connections are important. Your network matters. I love how you said that, right? Like you don't have to be a journalistic expert here. You're not a trained journalist, but just taking on a collaborative philosophy, including that other format you mentioned, the guest blog is a collaborative format. You're pitching it, right? They're publishing it. You're collaborating with an editor. That's how I met Ann too. I'm the same, right? I wrote for Copyblogger. I wrote for CMI. I wrote for Marketing Profs. I wrote for you guys. It was a dream of mine, right? And that's maybe how one of my earliest connections to you. So the trick is to get that in the content pipeline earlier and give people some time. I'm writing a thing on this. You know, it's going to go live in a couple of weeks and tell them, I'm hoping for something on this topic, this number of words by this date. Make it easy for them. Ironically, pro influencers get back to you very fast. If you write to Michael Brenner and ask him for a quote, he'll give one to you within like an hour.
Because he understands the benefit of it, right?
Because he knows. Yeah, they have a PR mindset. People that have never given a contributor quote might want to go back and forth with you. A little bit almost harder to work with. Like,
right.
When do you need it? What time of day? How long should it be? How does this sound? Or they give you back 1,000 words and you're like, what do I do with that?
Well, and I mean, a couple tips. You don't have to use everything they said, right? Because that's what journalists do. They interview people and they either don't use it at all or they use a little piece of it. So that's something you can do. Now, bringing this back to social, a lot of people might be thinking, it seems like a lot of what you're talking about is published on a blog, but it could be in a video as Andy has done. And it could also be obviously published on platforms that will accept long-form written content, which are only three of them that I'm aware of, which is Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And LinkedIn has a cap on how many words you can put out there before they require you to put it into an article. So generally speaking, when you are publishing this opinion content on the platforms, any particular tips or thoughts on how to do that, assuming we've got the strong opinions inside of it?
Well, for starters, I'll link back to your excellent keynote from Social Media Marketing World, where you made the case for long form content, you make the case for LinkedIn. I am a big advocate of long form content on LinkedIn. The newsletter idea is to just click on write article and put the article in there. You can even take it from your blog, you know, let it go live on your blog and 2 days later, move it into LinkedIn. And then you can create a newsletter for it, give it a short, simple name. And then you make a post for that article and it goes into your follower streams. And that is a fantastic way to start a conversation on a topic. You're going to get way better engagement there than on your blog. I don't know, Mike, would you agree with this statement? Blog comments have moved off of websites and onto social platforms.
We don't have them turned on anymore. I mean, Copyblogger was one of the early ones, which I was like, oh no, are you kidding me? Right? Because back in the early days, it was all about engagement in the blog comments. But I think it's a standard practice that people turn off comments on because it's been over inundated by spam.
I should add that. Things to remove from your website, blog comments.
There you go.
It just doesn't happen there. Yeah. The conversation is on the platform native.
You can have a whole different debate on that, right? Because there's people that disagree with that probably still to this day.
Right. Yeah, that's a mundane but topic that I'm sure a bunch of people just had opinions as soon as they heard that. But yes, publishing native content on the platform, because that is an interaction, that is a place where the conversation happens. That is the place where you could respond and you can mention others and pull other people in the conversation. If it was collaborative, you can mention them when you finally make the post. In the LinkedIn article, I put their faces in there. If it's in LinkedIn and you can at profile and they get a mention right there from the article. And after your articles get some traction, if you grow a LinkedIn newsletter, you could sort of put ads for your other content right into it. Like if I have a webinar coming up, I'll break the flow of my article and like a media publication, like put in like, hey, I have a webinar coming up, check it out. So it is long form content native on the platform. It's a little bit sad to hear myself say this because you remember we all said a million times, don't build on rented land.
Right.
Do you remember how we always used to say that?
Yes.
Build on rented land.
But we are also building on our own land too, right? Aren't we?
We are still, yes. It's not either or. It is a syndication strategy. All of my content is still in its most detailed form on my website. And if I want to send people there, I can just on LinkedIn put 2/3 of the article and then have a call to action to go visit the original to read the rest, which I sometimes do. Sometimes I don't bother. I haven't measured a difference yet. So don't build on rented land unless it's in addition to your own land and if it's very profitable. Then go build and rent the land.
Well, if I was to say, I'd say it's okay to lease some land from the social platforms because today those are the places where the conversation happens, right? And those are the places where you will be rewarded with exposure, right? If people start commenting, and especially on LinkedIn, people in their network might see it and it might create an incredible kind of different kind of experience. Andy, first of all, it's been great to roll back the metaphorical clock with you and talk about how things have really evolved and changed over the many years, because they really have. And it's been really, really fascinating to talk about how to find a topic that could have opposite opinions, that doesn't have to be ridiculously risky, and to create content around it and how to collaborate with others. I know we've just scratched the surface of what you do on a regular basis. So if people want to connect with you on the socials, this is Social Media Marketing Podcast, which platform? And if they want to check out your company, where do you want to send them?
LinkedIn is by far my best network. I have, what do they call it? The primary is set to follow. If anyone wants to connect with me and chat with me, just click on the three dots and go to connect, and you're welcome to connect with me and then we can chat. The LinkedIn newsletter is there. It's called Digital Marketing Tips.
Under your personal profile, Andy Crestidina, is that correct?
It's on my personal profile, yes. I'm publishing it. As you know, LinkedIn newsletters can be under companies or people. Mine's under myself. Orbitmedia.com is our business. As I said, web development and website optimization. There's 55 of us. We're here based in Chicago. The blog is where I published originally and published first. That's once every 2 weeks. And then, you know, my book is on Amazon, my channel's on YouTube. Connect with me anywhere.
Andy Crestidina, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today.
This was awesome, Mike. Thanks for the opportunity. Super fun.
Hey, if you missed anything, I took all the notes for you over at socialmediaexaminer.com/611. If you're new to the show, be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app. If you've been a longtime listener, let your friends know about this show. I'm at Stelzner on Facebook, at Mike_Stelzner on Twitter/X. And do check out our other shows, The Marketing Agency Show and The Social Media Marketing Talk Show. This brings us to the end of the Social Media Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner. I'll be back with you next week. I hope you make the best out of your day, and may your marketing keep evolving. Catch you next time.
The Social Media Marketing Podcast is a production of Social Media Examiner.
Want more good stuff? Sign up for our top-notch social marketing newsletter. We deliver it straight into your inbox 3 days a week. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates.